BFF Radio Catskill. Rare Pair Radio, Friday at 8 p.m.
It's 6:30 and time for the local edition. That's local news and information to keep you connected in Sullivan County and Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole. And thank you so much for joining us this evening here at the end of the week for the last local edition of the week. Coming up, we'll check in with Paul Plumador, artist, about Delaware Valley Arts Alliance's Paper Trail. And we typically try to check in with some local arts and culture on a Friday evening. But first, we've got our first guest already ready to talk to us here because, you know, the State University of New York Chancellor Jim Mylotras announced recently that SUNY campuses can open fully in person in the fall if enough students, faculty, and staff get vaccinated. What might the fall semester look like at SUNY Sullivan right here in Sullivan County? Well, to help us answer that question, on the phone with us right now, returning to Radio Catskill, SUNY Sullivan President Jay Quaintance. Hello, Jay. How are you doing today?
Good, Jason. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, welcome back. And so what did you think when you heard the news?
Well, you know, it was really great news because we've sort of been planning that direction anyway. I mean, we were kind of thinking we're going to be back in person 60-70%. But with the, opening up the vaccination availability to people 16 and over starting next Tuesday, we're really hopeful that we're going to be able to get everybody vaccinated that chooses to be and back on campus with the correct protocols and appropriate measures in place, but to have as close to a normal semester as possible. I mean, we're really ready for that.
Yeah, I bet. I bet everybody's really ready for that. I guess we should back up just a little bit though, and just have you give us an update on how you're doing the spring semester right now. What form is it taking, and how's it been going?
So spring semester this year looked a lot like fall semester this year, which is to say we had about 90% of our courses offered online or in some distance learning format, although we did offer a late start session that started in mid-March that also included a more of a hybrid experience. So we have some people that are on campus one day a week and then, you know, taking the rest of their coursework in a distance learning format. And that was, you know, pretty successful. We are rolling out some stuff for the summer that is going to also be more of a hybrid and some more face-to-face classes right in our building. And then we're also doing some work out in Narrowsburg at the Narrowsburg Union with some face-to-face classes. So we're trying to do as much as we can in person. I think, you know, the whole world is just ready to come out from under this veil, and anything we can do to keep people safe, engaged, and learning is where our thoughts are.
Everybody is ready for that, and I don't know, it seems like I'm daring to be hopeful as more and more people get vaccinated. Of course, at the same time, we're hearing warnings from health experts that now's not the time to let up, that people still need to be doing what they should be doing. And we're actually around the country, but specifically here in Sullivan County, we're headed towards a third peak. We almost have as many active cases as we did in the mid-January peak. And now you've got students, I assume, are you on a spring break now, or did you already do that?
So we didn't have a spring break this year. The SUNY schools opted out of having, you know, kind of a traditional spring break. And what we did was compress the semester a bit. So we started a little later. We started on February 2nd, and we're going to end a little early this year. We've had some kind of study days or mental health days thrown in throughout to give people a little bit of a break. But rather than take that kind of traditional week off, you know, when we were planning for the spring semester, it was obviously at a time when cases were at a very high level, and we didn't think as a system that we could really manage to say, okay, everybody go away for a week or whatever, 10 days, whatever it would be, and then come back in a safe manner. So rather than do that, we just compressed everything and have been working through it in that way. And it's largely proven to be fairly successful. That said, we're still, you know, obviously while we're trying to get everyone vaccinated and we support vaccination, we have the vaccination clinics being run through the county health office and public safety at the college campus in the Paul Gary Fieldhouse. We're still making sure that people are maintaining social distance, they're wearing masks, they're following all of the protocols that we've all become pretty accustomed to over this last year.
So you're not having any notable problems with cases of COVID among your students or teachers?
You know, knock on wood, Jason, we really haven't. And I think it's a testament to the adherence to those protocols that people have adopted and really recognized that if we're going to get through this, we all have to work together. And I agree with you. You know, Sullivan County does look like it's heading for another spike. It's happening all across the country, unfortunately, certainly in New York. But as more and more people get vaccinated, I think we're going to start to bend that curve down again. And I agree with you. We just, now's not the time to give up on the safety measures that we've all learned to deal with.
And as you mentioned there, you know, so many of the people that are getting vaccinated locally are doing it right there on your campus with Sullivan County Public Health's major pod point of delivery being there in the field house at SUNY Sullivan. What's that been like from your perspective? How's that been going?
It's been going very well, honestly. You know, this is something that we train for annually with Sullivan County Public Health and our staff. And so we were ready when it came time to activate the pod. And as of today, I believe we will have vaccinated pretty close to 3,800 people through the field house since we started there. So we're gratified. We're happy to be a partner. It's been really pretty impressive to me. I was there yesterday speaking with folks, and they've had over 300 volunteers working in the pod at the field house on campus. And our nursing students have really stepped up, and they have served in many roles, whether that was, you know, checking people in, what they call a flow monitor, just kind of people that are working through the system, and then also as vaccinators. And when I spoke to one of our nursing students a couple weeks ago, she said, you know, when we were asked to volunteer, I just looked at it as an opportunity to be part of history, that this is, you know, their moment. And, you know, she was just excited to be a part of it in any way she could. And I think that's been the common theme of the people that I've seen there. I've volunteered several times, and, you know, I see returning faces as volunteers from all across Sullivan County, which just to me speaks to the collective, you know, willpower of we're going to get through this and we're going to fix it. So
it's great. So back to the fall now, looking at reopening, which, like, as you said, it's kind of what you were hoping for and planning for anyway. Like you said, it does depend on if, you know, the people that are returning, the majority of these students get vaccinated. Now it's being opened up as to all ages 16 and above next week already. And in that sense, you know, August is feels like a long ways away, but what is there anything that you will have to do to make sure that enough people are vaccinated out of the faculty and the students? And are you going to, like, require some kind of documentation or something like that? Just to know for sure.
So as an individual college at this time, we're not able to require anybody to be vaccinated. Although I think by the state opening it up to anyone over the age of 16 starting Tuesday, I think that that's the first step in a state mandated, you know, we require vaccinations for all kinds of things at the college and as they do in the public schools. Right now, COVID-19 is not among those required vaccines, but I can imagine that as the vaccine supply continues to grow and more people are vaccinated, that might become a mandatory thing. We're looking at, you know, we've had in place now since fall semester mandatory pool testing of anyone who is on campus. So what that means is that if you're on campus, for, whether you're teaching or you're a student, we are aggregating test samples, sending them off to Syracuse, to Upstate Medical University for the processing of the tests. And then if we have a positive, which, knock on wood, we haven't yet, we then can identify the individual and go through the contact tracing and all of the other protocols that are in place to identify potential outbreaks before they happen. What we would like to do is continue that pool testing, encourage as many individuals, both students, faculty, staff, to be vaccinated, and then, you know, if we need to, identify those and then go through the process of quarantining them. We have had discussions with County Health about, and they've been very helpful to us in terms of, just like they were with the school districts, in getting our faculty and staff vaccinated. So we're pretty good on that front. We're working now with them to discuss the potential for vaccination clinics specifically targeted at our students. And, you know, my primary concern for the college is those students who are going to be moving into the dorms. We do plan on opening the residence halls this fall. And, you know, having the majority of people within that residence facility vaccinated would really go a long way to easing my mind in terms of potential exposure and a potential outbreak. Although we will continue doing the pool testing and the surveillance testing to make sure that everybody is safe.
And I'm sure you've already been developing guidelines, procedures, but you're still going to continue to develop guidelines, procedures for how the dorm ought to operate when it is open again?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we follow guidance as it comes out every day from the state level. And we're looking at best practices, CDC guidance, State Department of Health, County Health. You know, right now what we have as a draft plan, I guess, is being open at about three-quarter capacity. And then what that means is that we would have about 25% of rooms in reserve as quarantine space. So should we find an individual who tests positive, we would be able to isolate them until they were able to return to their home residence or, you know, go through the recovery process. So we're trying to, you know, plan for every potential situation. Yeah. The ideal situation would be as many people as possible having the vaccination. Those that aren't vaccinated before they come, we would work with County Health locally to get them vaccinated once they arrive, and then, you know, knock on wood, have a pretty safe, low-key semester.
Absolutely. And that's apart from like all the COVID stuff and everything, is there anything else that you want the community to know about what's going on at the college?
Well, you know, a couple of things. You mentioned Chancellor Mellotris at the beginning of this conversation, and we were fortunate to have him come visit us a couple of weeks ago. He met with, you know, he toured the pod, the point of distribution. I think he was pretty impressed. You know, community colleges collectively across New York State have been the point of vaccination for over 200,000 individuals so far. So we're pretty excited about playing a role in that here in Sullivan County. He had an opportunity to meet with a lot of our nursing students and a lot of our faculty and staff and hear about the great things that are going on. And it was just coincidence that we were about the same time ranked as the number one community college in New York State and number 14 college overall. So we're feeling pretty proud of the work we're doing. It's a testament to everybody's collective effort over several years, and it certainly isn't just through the COVID pandemic, but it's really the kind of thing that we've been doing and doing it really well now for a long time. And then the other thing that I think people should know is that we were just recently designated by the U.S. Department of Education as a Hispanic serving institution, which means that 25% of our student population are individuals who identify as Hispanic, which is, I think, reflective of the changing demographics in our area, the draw that we have from students coming up from New York City. But even more importantly, it's, I think, a testament to the fact that at a higher rate than ever, more folks from Hispanic communities are attending college. And that, to me, is really telling and is so much a part of the equity issue that community colleges work to fulfill. You know, we are democracy's colleges, and I've said it many times before, but this is just another indication that we're the place that people know that they can go to get a leg up and start, you know, start here and go far, as we say. So, you know, we're excited. It's a crazy time, and it's been, I would be completely lying if I said that it hasn't been a stressful year, but I am very, very optimistic about the future, and I'm super optimistic about the future of Sullivan County and the role that SUNY Sullivan plays in that.
Wow. And just, I mean, just to recap everything that we've talked about, especially the last few things you mentioned there, I mean, we're talking about, you could take it to the philosophical end of the state of democracy, but also developing the workforce, especially coming out of hopefully an economic downturn. The acts of vaccinating people and developing the healthcare workforce. All of these things that are key issues right now in America, diversity and changing demographics, all of these things that are top stories around the country, they're all coming together right there at SUNY Sullivan.
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned workforce, and we could just take healthcare as the quickest, easiest one. We right now, the Roscoe Nursing Home was sold to from a not-for-profit to a for-profit entity. Part of that sale was, and we're going to be talking more about this, but it will allow us to develop an LPN program. So we will have everything from CNA all the way to a BSN through a partnership with Empire State College, so that people right here in Sullivan County can enter that pipeline for workforce in healthcare at any point and be able to get to what they need. We're doing much more now with our Catskill Hospitality Institute as tourism and hospitality continues to open up, and there's a complete rebirth in Sullivan County. There's, you know, they're hiring at Resorts World. They're hiring at Legoland. They're going to be hiring at the Cartwright. There's opportunities right now. And if you look around at what Foster Supply Hospitality has done, there just continues to be this resurgence in hospitality and tourism and the restaurant world. We're excited.
And you guys are there at the crossroads of all of that great stuff. We're going to have to get going, but thanks for letting us know what's up now. And let's check in again as we get closer to more things happening over there at SUNY Sullivan.
Thanks, Jason. I appreciate the time.
All right. Thank you. This is Jake Waitens, president of SUNY Sullivan, talking to us. Talking about reopening in the fall and everything that's happening between now and then over there at SUNY Sullivan in Lock Sheldrake. Coming up, we'll be checking in with the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance with our next live guest, so don't go anywhere. This is the local edition.
This week in This American Life, Derek joined the military to be a soldier, and right away that's what he got. He was jumping out of airplanes, he was digging foxholes, you know, army stuff. And one day, he got a new assignment. They told him,
you wouldn't have to do any field duty, but you would have to sing and dance.
Amateurs, people doing things they are not trained to do, this week.
This American Life, Saturday evening at 6.
Hi, I'm Amy Brightfield, Livingston Manor resident and WJSF Board of Trustees member. We're really excited about all the great things that are happening here at WJSF, and we're looking for new members to join the team. Join the Board of Trustees who are supporting the mission and direction of your community radio station. Email getonboard@wjsfradio.org. That's getonboard@wjsfradio.org. Thank you for listening.
Hi, my name is Aaron Bendage, and this week I'm starting a new program on WJFF called Borscht Beat. Every week on this program, I'll play a selection of Jewish music from my vast collection of LPs. I'll also be drawing from the greater selection of music available in the digital world. So tune in each week and you'll never know what you'll find in the great world of Jewish music.
Sunday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
This is a local edition, local news and information to keep you connected in Sullivan County, the Catskills, Northeast Pennsylvania. Paul Plumador's long and varied creative life includes performing with the Paul Taylor Dance Company, teaching at New York University's Tisch School of the Arts, and Sweetbriar College in Virginia. He brings all of these experiences into creating his paper art, and his creations will be on exhibit starting this weekend at the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance. Joining us now on the phone, it's Paul Plumador, local artist. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm very well. How are you, sir?
Good, good. So I have a quote from you, and the quote says, "I have no artistic philosophy other than to follow where my eye leads me and to create images that may shock or disorient the complacent mind." So it seems like you have a diverse background, and you have a dance background, and now you're working on paper. What got you started with paper, and is there a connection to dance in that?
I don't know what the connection is exactly, although when I make art, I think of it very much as like the same way I would think of doing choreography, although that's hard to explain, but that's sort of what goes through my head. Actually, I've been making the paper art since the mid-70s, and one day I just picked up a book and just started cutting it up. I have no idea why I did that, but I liked what I saw, and I just kept doing it, and I've been doing it for like 40-plus years.
Wow, okay. So what can people expect from this upcoming exhibit?
So what I don't call my work collage so much as I call it montage, and not to be pretentious, but it's the actual definition of a montage is when you combine diverse elements in a way that they seem to be, that they've always been that way. So it's a little different. Collage tends to be more just diverse elements that you put together in interesting ways. But when I finish a piece, it's often seamless, or you can't really tell what I've put with what and how I've assembled it. So that's just my slight change of terminology. I work in a lot of different series, so they're all cut in slightly different ways. My most recent series, which will be on display at the show, is called Animal Kingdom. And in that series, I'm turning humans into animals, or animals into humans, I should say. So it's a very anthropomorphic approach. Some of the others I do, I have a series called Fashion Plates, which I'm working with mid-19th century hand-colored fashion plates that came out of Paris, and doing all sorts of crazy wild things with those. I have a series called 50-50, and that's where I take two people and I combine them in a way, it's often a man and a woman, and I combine them in ways to make new, weird, unusual people. There's others, there's cut-ups, there's outside-ins, there's motleys, there's wave patterns. Wave patterns are also a recent series of mine. And those I'm combining in a way that's almost looking like shockwaves, hard to explain, really. And sometimes I do shadow boxes, and those are not flat pieces, and they usually start with some paper, and then I add other found objects to them. Could be bones, money, all kinds of feathers, anything I come across.
Now, that's examples of lots of different types of things that you do, or will there be examples of all those in this exhibit?
All of those things I mentioned will have examples there. And I have to say, Chrissy Smith, who's the new gallery director at DVAA, I mean, I have over 70 pieces in this show, and it's not that large a gallery. And so she was very, very creative and great to work with, and we came up with a way of displaying them that really just has to be seen to be comprehend it, but it's quite beautiful what she did.
Now, we talked to you at the end of February. Well, hold on. I'm sorry. Before we get there, this is what I'm wondering. You're working with a lot of paper and
yes.
doing lots of different things, you know, thematically, visually. Do you find yourself collecting lots of papers? Do you have stacks of papers in your facilities? Are you a paper hoarder or anything like that?
I'm a hoarder of books. I have lots of bookcases in my studio. I only work from really old material. The books I collect are anywhere from the mid-19th century up to about 1920. That's kind of the period I like. And yes, I have lots of old books. Fortunately, I'm able to buy things that are with broken bindings or, you know, have maybe some foxing somewhere in them. So I'm able to cut them up without too much guilt about destroying the books. But I, the way I look at it, a lot of this material would never be seen again if someone didn't, like, bring it out somehow. So cutting it up and making something new out of it, I feel like it's like sort of giving it a second life as well.
It's maybe not literal recycling. It's a conceptual recycling.
A sort of a conceptual recycling, exactly.
So before we go, the last time we spoke to you, you were talking about the Great Wall in Honesdale, and you were getting submissions for that, and that deadline passed. Right? Can you just give us an update on how that's going?
That deadline came and went. We got 327 entries from 150-something artists. It was an overwhelming experience. So much really great and wonderful art. It was very hard to hone it down to 12, but we did manage that, and we're in the process now of collecting the files and preparing them for printing. And the wall will go up the tip end of May or the very beginning of June. And then we will have a show. The artists that are on the wall, we will have a show as well in the Main Street Gallery in Honesdale. And all of those artists will be invited to show other work. So we're very excited about it this year. It's going to be very bright and colorful, and we all could use that this year.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Paul. Well, the show is Paper Trail. It's at the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance starting this weekend, starting tomorrow, going through May 8th. And we've been speaking to the artist, Paul Plumador. Thank you for joining us again tonight.
You're very welcome. And if people need more information, go to DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org. And it's Thursdays through Saturdays, 11 to 4.
Okay, thanks.
And you don't need reservations, I just want to mention. And but you do have to wear a mask, and not more than 15 people are allowed in at one time.
Still following
guidelines. And upstairs in the Loft Gallery is another show happening at the same time. People can see that Phyllis Bulkin Layers Inside Out show, which is a 3D art relating to maps.
All right. Well, thank you, Paul. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
And again, the website is DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org. We've been speaking with Paul Plumador. This is the local edition, and that is the week that happened, and now it's over. It's your Friday evening. We're about to get into our Friday night programming. I want to thank everybody that participated in the local edition tonight and all week long. And thanks, as always, to Patricio Rubio for helping put this together, and our own Tim Bruno. And thank you for listening to the local edition. Oh, one last thing. If you missed any of the episodes of the local edition this week, any of the great conversations we had, we spoke to Congressman Delgado. We've been talking about the vaccines. We've been talking about important issues in the area. You missed any of this, make sure you don't miss any of it ever again. Subscribe to the local edition wherever you get your podcasts. Could be Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher. Don't miss a local edition. We're on the podcast. Okay, and support for this past hour came from Forthright Cider, Youngsville Ciders and Mead, crafted with locally sourced ingredients, supporting community charities with a portion of sales through the Solidarity Cider Program, ForthrightCYDER.com. And from Garnet Health Medical Center, Catskills, located in Harris and Calicoon, member of the Garnet Health System, GarnetHealth.org.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. WJFF Jeffersonville. W233AH Monticello.
Support for Radio